Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. Tribes.
Hello. Today let's talk again about an all too familiar subject, the murder of our people by the racial enemies we have taken into our midst. I don't really like to spend time talking about individual murders when matters so much more important and so much more tragic need our attention. But when I've talked about this subject in the past, when I told you in August about the gang initiation murder of two young white women by the Black and Mestizo Crips gang in Fayetteville, North Carolina, for example, the enormous response I received showed me that most Americans weren't aware of what is happening in this country. They were shocked by what I told them, or at least they were shocked by the fact that they had to hear about these murders from me instead of from Tom Brokaw or Dan Rather or Peter Jennings. They were shocked that the news of these horrendous crimes against our people were suppressed by the national media. And I was shocked that my listeners were shocked. I had thought that everyone knew about this suppression of the news, which doesn't fit. But apparently they didn't. And I suspect that many still don't. So, 2 months ago, on October 2nd, Gary Kazaska, a 41-year-old apartment building owner, was jumped on by three black teenagers as he walked along the sidewalk in front of one of his buildings in Buffalo, New York. Laughing and gesticulating like a troop of baboons, the three young blacks knocked Kazaska down and then took turns kicking him as hard as they could. Several bystanders witnessed the attack, but were afraid to come to Kazaska's aid. You know how the media would have dealt with that. Quote, white adults assault black children on Buffalo sidewalk. Janet Reno sends in FBI. Hate crime charges to be filed against white adults. Bill Clinton denounces white racism in special television appearance. End of quote. Well, the bystanders didn't want to take a chance with that sort of thing. So they played it safe and just watched while the black teenagers enjoyed themselves enormously as they kicked Gary Kazaska to death and then ran off down the street hooting and yelling. A neighbor, George Boose, told the Buffalo News, quote, I've never seen someone so beat up in all my life. The doctor told me his insides were split open. End of quote. Members of Kazaska's family told the Buffalo News that they couldn't understand why he was beaten so viciously, and they couldn't understand the motive for the killing, since $200 in cash in Kazaska's pockets was not taken by the young blacks. Well, the Buffalo News did report all of this. The story is in the paper's October 4th edition. Good for them. The problem is that papers outside of Buffalo didn't report it. The national media didn't report it. People outside the Buffalo area weren't allowed to hear about it. It is news that just doesn't fit. You see, if a black convict is dragged behind a truck in Texas by three white convicts, that is news that fits. It's big news. It's news that can be used to make whites everywhere feel guilty about white racism. Oh, incidentally, Kazaska was a homosexual. I imagine that because of that, the media bosses really hated to have to pass up this story. It could have supplemented so nicely their story about the killing of the homosexual Matthew Shepard in Laramie, Wyoming, at just about the same time, and could have been used to prove once again to everybody how beastly people are who don't like homosexuals. But it just didn't fit. The murderers were black teenagers, so the story was killed. On October 16th, three different black teenagers in Burlington, North Carolina, 13-year-old Joseph Jones, 16-year-old Harold Jones, and a 17-year-old black girl, Dorothea Bynum, grabbed a 10-year-old white girl, Tiffany Nicole Long, from the sidewalk just a few doors from her home, dragged her behind a garage, and beat her and sexually tortured her until she was dead. One of the young blacks twisted a piece of television cable around Tiffany's neck to stifle her screams while the other blacks were torturing her. Police used bloodhounds to find Tiffany's mutilated corpse in a pool of blood behind the garage at 4:30 the next morning. Burlington police, who viewed the little girl's body, said the murder was the most vicious crime they had ever seen. When the three black teenagers who killed Tiffany were brought into court, dozens of the teenagers' relatives and the local NAACP showed up to protest. "It's a racist county," the NAACP chairman protested, "and the young blacks wouldn't get a fair trial." "The three black teenagers are retarded," the relatives protested, "and shouldn't be held accountable." The police were brutal to them in questioning them about the murder. "They're just children," the black relatives said, "and they should be allowed to go home to their parents." With all of that fuss, one would think that Mike Wallace or Time or Newsweek magazine would have taken notice. One would think that the whole country would have heard about it, like they did about the black convict in Texas who was dragged behind a truck. Did you hear about Tiffany's murder? Even one word? Now, of course, many people around Burlington, North Carolina, did hear about it. Even people as far away as Greensboro and Raleigh read about it in their newspapers. Of course, they were told repeatedly by the local media that what happened to Tiffany was not a hate crime. There was nothing racial about Tiffany's murder. I mean, how could there be? There were no white racists involved. The last thing the media wanted to do was get all of those North Carolina crackers stirred up. Anyway, news of Tiffany's murder, just like news of the murder of Gary Krasoska, just didn't fit. And of course, there are a lot of other things you haven't heard about in the last couple of months because they don't fit. But as I said at the beginning of this broadcast, I really don't like to waste time talking about all of these crime details because I'm afraid we'll end up studying the trees and failing to see the forest. And I'm a lot more concerned about the forest than I am about the trees. That doesn't mean I'm not sickened when I read about the sort of thing which happened to little Tiffany Long. But the fact is that we are engaged in a war in which hundreds of millions of our people will die. And it's that war on which we need to focus our attention. You know, the problem is not that blacks do the sort of things they did in Fayetteville or in Buffalo or in Burlington. That's the way blacks are. Rape and murder are their thing. Most of the violent crimes in America are committed by non-whites. We can't change their nature. We took them out of the African jungle and brought them into our midst, and we'll have to suffer the consequences of that terrible mistake until we remove them from our midst one way or another. Unfortunately, there is no peaceful way remaining for us to do that. All that remains to us now is violence and bloodshed and much, much suffering. There will be many more Crips gang initiation murders, many more white people being kicked and stomped to death on the sidewalks of our cities, many more little white girls being dragged behind garages and sexually tortured to death by black animals for whom such behavior is natural and normal. As I said, we're in a war, and there's no peaceful way out. It's simply win or lose. 130 years ago, right after the Civil War, we could have ended this problem peacefully. We could have sent them all back to Africa, but we put it off, and now we've lost the opportunity for any peaceful resolution. In fact, we've lost the opportunity for a peaceful resolution to a lot of other problems. We let things slide to the point that we no longer can vote our way out. The two-thirds of the population which approves of Bill Clinton and thinks that he shouldn't be impeached just for lying about a few cigar tricks he did in the White House has got the decent, hard-headed people outnumbered now. The feminists and the queers and the welfare rabble and the non-whites, together with the part of the white population which will vote for anybody who promises them more ball games on TV, can outvote the rest of us. And that's exactly what they'll do, shepherded by the Jewish media bosses. They'll destroy what's left of our civilization. They'll take us straight to hell because all they care about is hanging on to the perks they're getting from the system. That's really all they care about. I don't want to sound simple-minded about this. I understand that the next president of the United States may be a Republican instead of a Democrat. But he will be a man who will be elected only if he caters to the same coalition of system dependents, the same bread and circuses crowd, feminists, homosexuals, recipients of monthly checks from the government, and non-whites, whose approval of Bill Clinton is currently scaring the Republicans in the Congress away from prosecuting him. And of course, whoever is elected must cater above all else to the Jews. This fundamental political situation becomes worse every year as the country becomes less white through immigration and differential breeding rates, and as the continued decay, the continued destruction of traditional social institutions and structures yields more and more feminists, homosexuals, and confused, aimless people looking to the government for support. Of course, if the media reported what's going on, if the white couch potatoes and fashion-conscious yuppies and trendy liberal airheads had their noses rubbed in what's really happening in America, if the Jewish media began reporting things like the black gang murders of white women in Fayetteville and the stomping of Gary Krasoska in Buffalo and the torture murder of Tiffany Long, if they began giving the same sort of coverage to all of these atrocities committed by non-whites against whites that they gave to the killing of a black convict in Texas last summer and the killing of a homosexual in Laramie this fall, then enough white voters might get their act together to outvote the Clinton coalition. They might get some race-conscious politicians in office who could begin reversing some trends. They could begin by sealing the borders and launching a mass roundup and deportation of aliens. Then they could cut off the vote to everyone who's getting any kind of check from the government. That would be a good start. But of course, the Jews who control the media understand all of that, which is why they will continue suppressing the news that doesn't fit. The last thing in the world they want is for the white couch potatoes and sports fans to wake up and pay attention to what's happening. The last thing they want is for the present demographic trends to be reversed. They have the white heterosexual male on the run, and they intend to keep him running. They intend to run him right into the ground. Then there won't even be any potential opposition to their rule. There will be nobody at all to challenge them. You know, whenever I say something like that, I get a storm of protest from people who tell me that I am wrong to attribute such a scheme to the Jews. They will tell me, sure, there are some pretty nasty and destructive Jews running the Disney Company and the New York Times, but they are only a small minority of Jews. There are 6 million Jews in the United States, more than 2% of the population, and most of them have no connection to the mass media. I know a nice Jewish dentist, these protesters will tell me. He does good work on my teeth and doesn't charge too much. You can't condemn all Jews just because a few of them are bad. Well, of course, my real aim is not to condemn all Jews. My real aim is to secure the future for my people, to overcome the dangers that threaten that future. And you know, I cannot do that unless I address the problem of the Jews as a whole. I'll give you an example. Imagine that you are living in a nice, peaceful, clean, safe, white neighborhood, somewhere in America where the diversity mongers haven't had a chance to do their wrecking job yet. It's a neighborhood where your wife can walk down the street to visit a neighbor, even after dark, without having to worry about being grabbed by a carload of Crips who need a white victim for an initiation killing. A neighborhood where your children can play outside without your having to worry that they'll end up like Tiffany Long in a pool of blood behind some garage. Then, the house next door to yours is sold to a gypsy family, say, and they move in, all 27 of them. Of course, the local Christian minister organizes a welcome party for the gypsies just to show that there's no bigotry, no racism in your neighborhood, and all of the airheads and trendy do-gooders in the neighborhood go to the party. You go, too, just to find out what you're in for, and you meet all the gypsies at the party. And you discover that, on the whole, they're not an unfriendly bunch. Of course, the men all carry knives, and about two-thirds of them have criminal records, but two of them actually have steady jobs selling used cars. Their kids are dirtier and noisier than yours, but they don't seem really dangerous. One of the older gypsies is a quiet, dignified sort, and you strike up a conversation with him. He has a good sense of humor, seems to be intelligent and civilized, and you think that perhaps he won't be such a bad neighbor after all. Within a few days, however, reality begins setting in. Your kids' bicycles disappear from your yard and are never seen again. Someone breaks into your garage, steals all of your tools, siphons the gas from your car, and takes the battery. Trash from the gypsy's yard blows over into your yard. The noise, especially late at night, is a real problem. You spot the older gypsy you had spoken with at the church party on his front porch and decide to mention some of these things to him. He sympathizes with you, asks you to describe the tools that were stolen from your garage, and tells you that he will see what he can do. And sure enough, the next evening when you come home from work, he knocks on your door and hands you your set of socket wrenches which had disappeared from your garage. He tells you that he found them in his basement and suspects one of his nephews stole them from you, although he isn't sure. Of your electric drill and your other tools, he found no trace, however. And for the next three nights, there are no loud parties next door, and you are able to get some sleep. Your children have even made friends with two of the gypsy children, and one of their little girls seems really nice. Of course, your children have to be treated for head lice regularly as a result of playing with their new friends. A few problems with your neighbors remain, however. A couple of the young gypsy women are in business, with customers coming and going at all hours. And one of the gypsy men stands out on the sidewalk every night until quite late, selling drugs to people who pull up to the curb. These activities bring some pretty unsavory people cruising through your neighborhood. And one night your wife is knocked to the ground and her purse is snatched as she is walking back from a friend's home in the next block. And then the loud parties start again. You speak again with the older gypsy, and again he sympathizes with you, but not quite as much as before. You tell him that he should kick out of his house the two prostitutes and the drug dealer so that the neighborhood can live in peace with the rest of his clan. Well, No, he can't do that, he tells you. The two prostitutes are the daughters of his favorite son, and the drug dealer is his favorite nephew. Besides, they all need the revenue the activities of these three bring in. Their government welfare checks aren't enough to cover all of their expenses. He is really sorry about the situation, and he wishes he could do something for you, but... And what you finally understand is that your gypsy problem cannot be solved by thinking about your gypsy neighbors as individuals. As individuals, some of them are not really bad people. But as a whole, they have ruined your neighborhood, taken away your happiness and peace of mind, put your family in jeopardy, and cut the value of your property in half. If you want to solve this problem, it has to be solved as a whole. You begin to wish that you had listened to one of your neighbors who had suggested to you as soon as the gypsies bought the house next to you that you should burn it down before the gypsies moved in. Now, the analogy is not perfect, but it's good enough. Our problem is not just a few bad Jews who own the New York Times and make propaganda films, while most Jews are good citizens who must not be lumped together with the bad ones. Our problem is the Jews as a whole. In the first place, they have a lot tighter grip on the news and entertainment media than just the New York Times and the Disney Company. If you make a detailed study of the mass media, as I have, you'll find that the Jews effectively control or own most of them. Hollywood films, newspapers, news magazines, television, the music industry. That's how they're able to suppress news of the Fayetteville murders and what happened to little Tiffany Long, and to publicize the few white-on-black crimes so heavily that they've got most voters believing that these white-on-black crimes are typical of the criminal activity in America. And as for the majority of the Jews, the ones who are not actually involved in the ownership or management of the mass media, you'll find more of them than you ever imagined possible infesting all of the lower reaches of the media, so that if you get rid of the Jews at the top, more will simply pop up from below to take their places. And you'll also find that on all questions pertaining to the welfare of Jews, they stick together as tightly as any gypsy clan. If you want to, you go to that nice Jewish dentist you know and start talking with him about why the United States should cut off its huge annual subsidy to Israel and start supporting the Palestinians instead. But after that, you'd be well advised not to let him anywhere near your teeth. One final thing to keep in mind. The media bosses who made the decision to keep the news of those Crips gang initiation murders of the white girls in Fayetteville quiet, and also the news of the torture murder of little Tiffany Long, did these things for a reason. It's not just a whimsical thing. It's systematic. They're doing it for the Jewish tribe, not just for themselves. They're doing it because they understand that we're in a war, their tribe against our tribe, and they don't want us to understand that. Thanks for being with me again today.